It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
the state legislatures, and Virginia is now leading the pack, is doing everything they can to undermine the Truth in Lending Act. Now, they would never admit to that, but when you have a law that says $15 per hundred, that's terrible. And then you say 36% APR plus $20 per hundred plus another fee. We're getting further and further away from people being able to figure out what a loan costs.
Jay Spear at the Virginia Poverty Law Center continues to explain the changes to Virginia's payday lending law that take effect tomorrow, January 1, 2009. And during our weekly question and answer session, you'll learn about car title loans and how even a bankruptcy might not be enough to get you out of that predatory lending trap. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 29, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A new nonprofit organization, Drive to Work, now is helping low-income and previously incarcerated persons to restore driving privileges so they can drive to work and hold a job. Legal and other services are provided by attorneys without charge, except for an administrative fee of usually $100. Drive to Work has cooperative agreements with the Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles and other state and private agencies to assist in its work. To qualify for services, applicants must have income below twice the poverty level and be employed or have other resources to pay reinstatement fees, insurance, past due fines, court filing fees, and other costs. Drive to Work's goal is to restore driving privileges. Its services typically involve reinstatement of licenses or obtaining restricted driving permits. For more information, call 358-6727 or toll-free at 1-888-358-6727 or visit their website at www.drivetowork.org. In other news, another nonprofit organization, Vehicles for Change, helps provide vehicles to low-income people. If you don't own a car, you may be able to buy a car from Vehicles for Change for as little as $1,000. To qualify, you must have a job or verifiable job offer, you must be insurable with no DUIs, you must not have any other vehicle in your household, you must be drug-free and have no extensive criminal background, you must be able to pay for insurance, taxes, tags, and title, and be willing to take a 12-month loan to pay for your car. Usually, if you donate your car and it's sold, you can deduct only the amount it's sold for. But if you donate your car to Vehicles for Change, you can deduct the full market value of the car from your taxes. If you call and commit your car for donation by 11:59 p.m. tonight, you'll get the tax deduction for 2008, and your car will be picked up in January. For more information, call toll-free at 1-800-835-3821 or at www.vehiclesforchange.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is levy. A levy is when a sheriff comes to your home and makes a list of property that can be sold to pay a judgment against you. A levy is also called an attachment and can be placed only on certain property. A levy cannot be placed on property exempt from levy. This includes $5,000 worth of household goods, $1,000 worth of clothing, medically prescribed health aids, $10,000 worth of tools and equipment you need for work or school, a motor vehicle worth up to $2,000, and up to $5,000 of other property if you list it in a homestead deed filed with the circuit court. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for the weekly question and answer session, and we're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Miss Lee. I'm from Chesterfield, Virginia, and my question is, if you have a title loan and you file bankruptcy, which is a Chapter 7, will they take possession of your vehicle?
Well, that is an excellent question. And the answer is a definite maybe, but probably not. There are probably ways to avoid losing your car if you have a car title loan on it and you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. First, let me say that a car title loan is obviously a terrible idea. What you're doing is you are borrowing from the car title lender about half what the car is worth, and they are charging you anywhere between 300 and 360% interest per year, which is allowed under Virginia law through a loophole that allows the car title lenders to behave as if they are credit card companies where there is no limit on the rate of interest. And when you take out a car title loan, allegedly they let you borrow another maybe $50 or $100 more than they actually lend you. And that's the loophole they use to be able to charge such high interest rates. The interest alone on a loan like that is usually a couple hundred dollars a month. So people will pay the minimum payment every month for month after month after month and then find that they have paid very little, if anything, toward the balance. Now, when you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy for that matter, you get what is called the automatic stay. That is, all collection activity stops. All of the calls, letters, lawsuits, judgments, garnishments, all other collection activities stop. Then what happens depends upon the value of the car, because up to $2,000 worth of a car is protected from your creditors by what's called the poor debtor's exemption. And if you have a car worth more than $2,000, you can protect the excess over $2,000 by filing what's called a homestead deed. Now, The car title lender is not going to be happy about this, and they may try to pretend as if they are what's called a secured creditor. And if you file a bankruptcy and it is a secured creditor, you can't keep the property you're buying on credit unless you pay for it. Now, the argument that we would raise in that situation was, well, you have paid for it. You've paid probably much more in interest than the car is actually worth, and that therefore the balance of the loan ought to be treated as an unsecured loan and could be discharged like all of your other unsecured loans and all of your other unsecured debts, your credit cards, your old medical bills, your old utility bills, things of that nature. But it really is going to depend on the exact facts and circumstances of your case. Have I succeeded in confusing you totally, or does some of this make sense?
It makes sense.
Thank you very much for being on the show. Appreciate your question.
Hang on, let in justice. Turn me around. Turn me around. No, turn me around. Ain't gonna let in justice. Turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking. Keep on talking. Marching up the freedom.
This year, the General Assembly allowed payday lenders to charge new fees that permit interest as of January 1, 2009, at an annual percentage rate of 362%, just a little lower than the current rate of 391%. What other nasty surprises are in the new law? Last month, at the statewide legal aid conference, Jay Spear from the Virginia Poverty Law Center explained the changes to Virginia's payday lending law that take effect January 1, 2009. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is there and brings you the second part of a two-part presentation.
The cost of the loan is probably the most important thing, and probably, as everyone always says around the country, the only real reform of payday lending is to cap the interest rates. And we did get a 36% cap, and many of you have told me that your legislators have sent letters to you saying, we got the cap, we got the 36% cap. And as I usually say about that, that is the truth. It is a half-truth, or a lie, as some people may call it, because there is a little bit of addition there, and that is you can also charge 20% of the loan proceeds. And if you borrow $500, that's $100. Plus, payday lenders can charge a $5 verification fee. What that means is that's a verification fee for what it costs them to look at the database and see whether, you know, they're complying with the law. Just recently, the Bureau of Financial Institutions put out an order, or the SEC put out an order saying that the payday lenders will have to pay 68 cents per database inquiry. So $4.32 per loan is just going to be pure profit. And according to how many loans they had last year, that's another $15 million windfall profit that the payday lenders are going to get just on the verification fees. So, quiz time. Which loan is cheaper according to the annual percentage rate? A two-week loan from Payday Loans to Go. By the way, that is a real payday lender. A two-week loan from Payday Loans to Go that costs $15 per 100. Now, this is exactly what the current law says. Or do you want to get a four-week loan from Easy Come, Easy Go payday lenders? Now, that's not a real one, but that costs $20 per 100 plus 36% APR plus a $5 fee. And that's what the law changes into in January 1st. Who can figure out which is cheaper? How many people think the Payday Loans to Go one is cheaper? How many people think the second one's cheaper? Wave goodbye to the Truth of Lending Act. And I say this because you cannot compare these loans. The whole reason we have a Truth in Lending Act is so that people can go out there and figure out what something costs, right, by using the annual percentage rate. The state legislatures, and Virginia is now leading the pack, is doing everything they can to undermine the Truth in Lending Act. Now, they would never admit to that, but when you have a law that says $15 per 100, that's terrible, and then you say 36% APR plus $20 per 100 plus another fee, we're getting further and further away from people being able to figure out what a loan costs. And before we know it, there will no longer be any teeth to the Truth in Lending Act, and no one will ever be able to figure out what loans cost. And if, by the way, much of that $4 million the payday lenders spent last year was spent undermining the Truth in Lending Act. There were ads in the paper constantly that said, don't believe opponents of payday lending that tell you that payday loans cost 391% APR. These are only two-week loans, and they only cost $15 per 100. These were the ads in the paper. And I thought to myself, This is what they're saying publicly. Can you imagine what they're telling their borrowers behind closed doors? Now, waiting period was put into this. You can't make a loan until the next day, a new loan until the next day, right? Very helpful, right? Means people have to be inconvenienced to go home and come back the next day. We never pushed for a waiting period. This all came from the petty lenders. They have all this long list of things that they do to try to rebut all the criticism they get. And this is one of the things they love. They claim this really helps with the cycle of debt. But as I say, it will only inconvenience borrowers and will not break the debt trap. I worry that this will hurt our lawsuits against the petty lenders for renewing loans. A lot of legal aid lawyers are suing currently. I think there's maybe 20-some lawsuits against petty lenders right now for doing these back-to-back loans, which is where you go in and you pay off your old loan, and then you get a new loan right away. And we've had two court decisions that have agreed that that is, in fact, renewing a loan. But the waiting period itself is really no help at all to the borrowers.
You're listening to a presentation given last month by Jay Spear from the Virginia Poverty Law Center about the January 1, 2009 changes to Virginia's payday lending law. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the Virginia Poverty Law Center's Jay Spear in a presentation given last month about the January 1, 2009 changes to Virginia's payday lending law.
The new debt collection restrictions. The way the payday loans currently work is that you write the, in fact, it even says in the law that you cannot post-state the check, that you have to write the check for the day you get the loan. And then the agreement is that they won't cash the check until your loan is due. But they changed that to say that the check now must be dated as of the date the loan is due. Senator Stolle insisted on this, and I really wasn't sure. He kept saying it had something to do with criminal prosecution. I didn't really understand what he was talking about. I think psychologically this might be a good thing for our clients. In Virginia, as many of you probably know, it is a crime to write a check knowing that you don't have the money in the bank to back that check up. And in fact, many of our clients are prosecuted for that all the time. However, when you get a payday loan, it's specifically in the Virginia Payday Loan Act that is not a crime. But it's always in the back of the minds of the borrowers that there's something wrong about this. Of course, nobody really tells them it's not really a crime, but they always get that feeling. And you add on top of that, when people do default, payday lenders are always saying that they're going to prosecute them for a crime, even though that's against the law as well. So I think this is a good thing. I think psychologically it's going to make people think a little less that maybe they've committed a crime by writing that check, even though they didn't have the money in the bank. Because the fact that it's post-dated, it's basically saying, I don't have the money now, but I will have it in 28 days or whenever the loan's due. They also added an additional civil penalty for lenders that threaten criminal proceedings for failure to pay. Again, we told them so many stories, and so many borrowers contacted the legislators and said they were threatening me with criminal prosecution that they came up with, I think it's the penalty is three times the amount of the check. Now, the first thing they did is they tried to slip this in and say that was your only remedy. But luckily, we caught that and fixed it, and it says that it's not your exclusive remedy, but it's an additional remedy. If you default on a $500 loan and they threaten you with criminal prosecution, you have a $1,500 claim, as well as a potential claim under the Consumer Protection Act. And then they put this other one in here where the lender can't sue you until 60 days after default. The payday lenders wanted that. This is one of those many, many provisions in there I really didn't pay much attention to because I didn't feel like any of them were really worth much. We really wanted the interest rate cap. And the payday lenders want you to talk about all these little, as they say, getting into the weeds and talk about all these other provisions that don't mean that much. But I think this potentially could be very helpful, too. I think these new debt collection restrictions, combined with the fact this one right here is where there is great potential to nail the payday lenders. This provision was added. It says that the petty lender shall comply with the restrictions and prohibitions applicable to debt collectors contained in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act regarding harassment or abuse, false or misleading representations, and unfair practices in collections. Typically, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is a federal law that restricts what a collector can do in collecting a debt. But one of the major problems with that act is it only applies to collectors. It applies to someone collecting someone else's debt. So when the petty lenders hire a debt collector, you can go after the debt collector for FDCPA violations. And by the way, the petty lenders hire the worst debt collectors in the country, typically, who threaten all sorts of things, like they're going to come visit you in your home and all that sort of thing. But now, because of this provision, it will apply to the payday lenders collecting their own debts. And I think this is really potentially a huge change. The payday lenders put this in there. We didn't ask for this. I think they just thought no one was really going to do anything with this. Harassment and abuse is what the payday lenders are all about in debt collection. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I wrote down some of the most common things that I hear about. Telephone harassment happens with every single... I mean, I talk to many, many people in payday loans. I tell them how to get out of payday loans, and I always tell them, just as a routine, now you're going to expect to get lots of harassment because it's almost a given. They do these visits at your home. A lot of payday lenders have a routine, and this, again, one of the whistleblowers told us about this. If the person doesn't come in on Friday to pay their loans, they would send somebody out on Saturday to visit them at their home. This is very humiliating. The calls and the visits to work are probably the worst thing. People are scared to death that they're going to lose their job over these. They literally go to people's jobs sometimes, but they almost always call the job. And then the third-party contacts is the fourth one. When you get a payday loan, they typically ask you for your references. And the person that wants to get the loan thinks they're asking for references has something to do with qualifying for the loan. But it has nothing at all to do with that, because the only way the way to qualify for a payday loan is to show that you have a bank account and a steady income, and they hold a mirror up, and if you fog it up, those are the three requirements. And the only reason they ask for your references is if you default on your loan, they're going to call your references. All of us hate the debt collectors, don't we? You know, even those of us who pay the bills on time, we still get calls from these people, mistake-wise. And of course, then you try to tell them in a nice way it's a mistake, and they're like, "What's the matter with you? Why don't you pay your debts?" You know, that kind of crap. So if it's not you, it's a family member or somebody who's had the same kind of... So we all hate them, and I think they're pretty much afraid to go to court.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a presentation given last month by Jay Spear from the Virginia Poverty Law Center about the January 1, 2009 changes to Virginia's payday lending law. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. We are back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about credit reports. The first tip is that bills, debts, and judgments older than 7 years and bankruptcies older than 10 years can't be kept on your credit report. The second tip is that if you question something on your credit report, you can send a written disagreement to the credit bureau, which then has 60 days to verify or remove the question information. The third tip is that if information is verified, you can put a short statement, usually 100 words, into your credit report giving your side. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and telephone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. By the year 2025, Virginia's population aged 60 and older will increase by more than 1 million, a nearly 100% increase from the year 2000. What's being done now to assure that seniors have access to legal advice and representation? Join us next week when our guest, Janet James, State Legal Services Director for the Department for the Aging, tells us about Project 2025 and what's being done to prepare Virginia to meet the legal needs of our senior citizens in the next 16 years. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrecht.